this is what they're trying to talk about around this whole area of connecting industry, government, research, and innovation. And that sounds like a real big task. How would you get all that together? So I'm looking forward to seeing what, to hearing more about this from each one of them. And I've had, lots of experience, both positive and negative, in terms of being, running my own company and doing various types of collaborations, different research collaborations, different government collaborations, involving, the provincial government, the federal government, Canary, NRC, a number of different kinds of things, and found that there are both pitfalls and benefits to being involved in these kind of partnerships, and so want to hear a little bit about that from each of these. And so we have three speakers. First of all, Don Fitzgerald is with the Innovations part of the city of Fredericton, and he's going to be our first one. I'll just mention the names first of all, and then I'll ask him to come up. And so he's involved in a lot of very interesting projects, and is going to tell us a little bit about that. Then we have Marie-José Pavadis, who is with the Canadian Defence Academy in Kingston, and they're doing some really interesting partnerships, and we're going to hear a little bit about that as well. And also Stephen Downs with the National Research Council has lots of opinions about all kinds of things. You can hear about him lots on his blog and his daily missives that come out by email. And he's going to tell a little bit about his perspective on partnerships, and also to do with the NRC, because the NRC is involved in tons of partnerships. That's really how they operate. So just want to, before we dive into that, just want to let you know that this Stephen wants to record this session on his iRiver, and then when it's recorded, he will put it on his site and make it available for other people, so that if you're making any statements, be aware that you're being recorded, and so just for your understanding of that. And the panelists will all agree that's fine. So before we move on any further, I just want to turn it over to Dr. Cyril.
Thank you. I was asked to. There you go. I feel like I'm at a White House press briefing. I was asked today to talk about linking technological infrastructure. Municipalities are in the infrastructure game, to economic development, community development, and if I could, to extend that specifically to e-learning. Obviously, I bring a municipal viewpoint to that. And when I started to think about this, I was really happy to be asked here, because sometimes when you're executing tasks, you kind of forget about the fact that this is part of an overall strategy and it's supposed to make sense. And this gave me a chance to reflect on that and to review. So to think of it in that way, I started off by saying, well, where are we today in terms of economic development? What's that all about, and how did we get there? And so I want to talk about what I call the three waves of economic development. And the first guy, as we know it today, modern economic development started shortly after World War II, primarily by the southern United States, who went calling and looking for employment, and they had a lower cost structure, a lower salary structure in the southern United States, and a much less pervasive union environment. And what they found was that they were able to woo manufacturing jobs from northern states to the southern states and generate some job growth and wealth creation. And the second wave happened almost directly after the people in the northern states said, something's going on here. And that was our second wave. They realized we are losing jobs to the south. We are uncompetitive as it relates to our overall labor costs and real estate costs. But they were much more developed than our, so the only way that they could normalize that is we saw the birth of the investment attraction subsidy. and the normalization of costs in the north with costs in the south. And so price competition was on. And we continued that way until the 1990s, when things start to change and we see the third wave of economic development. Manufacturing jobs are no longer bouncing around between the northern United States and southern United States and parts of Canada. They're going to Asia, South America, the subcontinent, India. And we started to realize that we live in a truly global environment. The third wave of economic development, the one that we're in today, is essentially a surrender to low cost. We can't support our lifestyles in North America by bidding down our wage rates or subsidizing our wage rates and our overheads to the extent that low-cost jurisdictions can do. So we planted a flag and we said we're going to own the research and development and the innovation part of job and wealth creation. Now, time will tell whether or not that's a good strategy. But seeing as it's really the only option we have, we better find a way to make it the right strategy. So if we're going to work on the knowledge side of things, if our future is on the knowledge side of things, economic development today then is all about connecting people, products, services, and ideas. We have to do that more efficiently than others. And now I want to kind of make a bridge to my community. How do we do that in Fredericton? Well, innovation and technology are very important drivers in our economy. And without them, we really wouldn't have much to offer except low cost. And since we're competing with Belfast, Calcutta, and not really St. John and Miramichi, we better find a way to innovate. We need to take advantage of our natural assets in Fredericton. Fredericton, to me, is really kind of a manufacturing town. What we manufacture are bright people. We manufacture university graduates, curious people, people who innovate, people who want to create new products, services, and wealth. And when we look at it from the municipality's point of view, what we want to do is we want to align our efforts to create the best environment for these folks to innovate here. We want to make sure that the people in Fredericton have tools as good as anywhere else in the world. We need to provide the right infrastructure, and we need to provide, enter into smart partnerships. And now I want to talk about an example of a partnership that we're proud of, innovation that we're proud of, that we were involved in here, that we think has helped drive that has helped drive our economy. Many of you, so I already did that. So many of you folks will be familiar with the Fred E Zone, our Wi-Fi network. In fact, if you go on Google and do a search, Fredericton Wi-Fi, you'll get about 50,000 hits. Kind of neat. It's generated a lot of stories and press coverage. But it's really the tip of the iceberg. It's not, in my mind, the best story that we have to tell. I want to dial the clock back to around 1999. Broadband was creeping out of institutions and into commercial operations. It was creeping into small and medium-sized enterprise and, to a lesser extent, into the home. Primarily provided by telcos. And telcos were deploying broadband where they could get the biggest hit quickest and fastest. And as a shareholder in a couple of telcos, I was proud that they were doing that. But Fredericton wasn't where we would like them to be on their distribution, on their distribution point. We weren't the low-hanging fruit from their perspective. But that was unacceptable to us. We had our own operation to run, and we needed to be better connected in terms of our ideas, our people, our products, and our services. So we were left with one option, or two options. we could wait, or we could take up the challenge to do it ourselves. So what we decided to do was to do it ourselves. We formed our own telco, and that's Innovations. So that's the company that I'm on the board of directors of. It's a wholly owned subsidiary of the city of Fredericton. It's a licensed non-dominant carrier with the CRTC, and it put us in place to be able to develop our own fiber optic network. But we couldn't do that on our own. The University of New Brunswick had a vision that this was a good thing. What was then SmartForce had a vision that that was a great thing. And Brunnet had a vision that that was a great thing. And they invested, not solely for a commercial return. And together, we built a fiber optic network around our community and through our community. We became an internet service provider, and we sold connectivity to our institutions, to our small and medium-sized offices, to our home offices. We have a very small market share in Fredericton, but a very significant market share in Fredericton, in my view. What we did is we caused the telcos to accelerate their deployment of broadband in our community, because they knew if they didn't, we would capture market share. We also were able to drive down the price point, which made our firms more competitive. What we delivered, or what happened as a result of that, was that we had access to high-speed bandwidth throughout the entire community. Manhattan can't say that today, but you can get high-speed broadband anywhere in Fredericton. We have leading-edge infrastructure, and rather than a barrier, our access to bandwidth is an enabler in our community. And we hope to establish Fredericton as a city of choice for the IT sector. And we believe that we've been successful in that regard. You know, Fredericton was founded in 1783, and it was a knowledge city back then. It was the seat of government. It was the diocesan capital for the Church of England. And it was where the university was. And in 1783, those were the knowledge industries. So we need to continue to be a knowledge town and provide the things that knowledge towns need. Innovation creates wealth and creates jobs. And we need to do that. We need to focus on innovation, because the alternative is to compete on price. And I don't want to live in a world where that's what my kids are going to do, or that's where I have to go back to. So we can't do it on our own. We need your help. We're open to partnerships. And we need to bring all the sectors together to make that happen. Thanks.
Okay, and now Marie-José is going to come and tell a little bit about what they're doing with the Canadian Defence Academy.
Hello everyone, my name is Marie-José Paradis. I'm the Acting Canadian Forces Continuing Education Program Coordinator from the Canadian Defence Academy. I've heard so many good things about André's last trip in New Brunswick that I had to come and experience it myself. Today I'll talk to you about CDA's vision, its mission, its history. I will also give you a brief overview of the situation today. I'll talk to you about our memorandum of understanding, what our expectations are, and what are the benefits for universities and colleges to get into an agreement with us. André and I will also answer any questions once we're done with my presentation. CDA's vision is to become a world leader in the field of military professionalism, leadership, professional development, and learning strategies. Our mission is to champion Canadian Forces professional development and lifelong learning to enable operational success. While this mission statement is clear, however, the verb champion merits some explanation. Champion should be understood as to be synonymous with such word as promote, negotiate, coordinate, focus, collaborate, integrate, encourage, support, facilitate, and foster. Champion does not imply ownership, governance, or control. CDA history. Well, the Canadian Defense Academy is the result of a 30-year period of thought, trial, error, and the application of reasoned, coordinated, and current study. Its predecessors, the Canadian Defense Educational Establishment, the Director of Professional Education and Development, and the Canadian Forces Recruitment, Education, and Training System. While they all fell short of the requirement, partly because none had the level of breadth of command or direct access to levels that allowed for robust governance of their mandate. CDA is with its academic engine consisting of the Royal Military College, which is located in Kingston, Ontario, the Canadian Forces College, the Canadian Forces Language School, Canadian Forces Management Development School, the NCM Professional Development Center, and the Canadian Forces Leadership Institute, which is also located in Kingston, is the embodiment of the lessons learned from the shortcomings and the successes of these earlier institutions. Today's situation, while the Canadian Forces members are pursuing self-learning opportunities in increasing numbers, we must provide the means for lifelong learning to encourage and promote learning as a requirement for all military personnel. So we must ensure that members develop their full intellectual potential. We must prepare them to be intellectually and professionally to meet challenges of future operations. And there's also a need for a new and updated memorandum of understanding with Canadian universities and colleges to reflect the new education reality in the military. I'll talk to you what our MOUs are about. They're there to simplify access to learning for military personnel in obtaining post-secondary education and upgrading. They're also there to facilitate the accreditation process with the goal of fair recognition of military members' training and experience. They're there to create opportunities to develop knowledge, share knowledge, and promote learning by improving the ability of knowledge. By signing an MOU with CDA, educational institutions become a partner under the CFPEP program, whose objective is to provide future educational opportunities to CF members, GND civilian employees, and also their families. So we expect our partners to offer lower residency requirements, to give fair recognition and accreditation of CF training and experience, to allow flexible credit transfer arrangements, to show a willingness to accommodate CF students with their educational needs during posting and deployments, and also to develop program curricula of defense and or security interests. In return, we'll provide assistance to university to develop CF sympathetic policies. We'll provide advice on the development of curricula of defense and security interests. We'll increase priority for education reimbursement funding for CF students attending your institution. And we'll also provide a link to university on our CDA website. In conclusion, while the Canadian Defense Academy wishes to enter into partnerships with universities and colleges to promote, support, and facilitate continuing education among GND personnel, dependents, or civilian employees, our hope is that you will support our members by becoming a partner too. Thank you.
Okay. Oh no.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. As you know, my name is Stephen Downs. I work with the National Research Council and Institute for Information Technology. I'm based in Moncton, New Brunswick. Many of you probably know me. I've worked with a number of you on various projects, formal and informal. I've been on this stage a number of times. And so you know, I look out here and I look out at my friends and neighbors and the people I work with. And it was sort of a surprise to be called earlier on today an international journalist, because it's really, well, I'm from Toronto or Vancouver or something, but no, I live right here in New Brunswick. I can only speak to you with respect to collaboration about my own personal experience of collaboration. Obviously, I can't speak on any official capacity on behalf of the National Research Council. That is, of course, for administration at the NRC to do. And were they to talk to you about this, they would talk to you about the processes and mechanisms for collaboration between ourselves and private industry. And I think I can point out that NRC has a wide variety of mechanisms to make this happen, and many of you have benefited from collaborations over the years with NRC. My own experience, though, is a little bit different. My collaboration with various people here in New Brunswick and indeed across the country comes as part of my regular workday. My regular workday is a little bit weird because I'm a researcher, I'm a scientist, I have documents that say so, I have the hair to prove it. And so I'm going to come at a lot of this stuff from a different perspective than you, and if I could give you any message today, it would be that. It was stated earlier on in the introductory panel that wealth creation is our priority. Wealth creation is what we're always about. But it's important, I think, for all of you to understand that that's not necessarily going to be my personal priority. When I walk into the office, I'm not going to be thinking, gee, how can I make business in New Brunswick wealthy? It's not to say I'm not going to be thinking about that, but I'm going to have other things on the table. Things that have been brought up already in this room. Things like the literacy and the education issues that are faced by people here in New Brunswick. I walk in the office, I'm thinking about things like, how can we get education to all of those people in an efficient and cost-effective manner? I'm not even necessarily thinking about New Brunswick, because I'm thinking about this on a national basis. How can we provide learning for all Canadians? Because it's the National Research Council. But even there, and if you look at my website, you'll see this, that I'm not even concerned about this on a national level. My objective is, at least in part, to provide learning resources and opportunities for people around the world, all people around the world. I think that's a responsibility that I have as a researcher and a scientist. So when you sit down and collaborate with me and you're thinking about, ooh, wealth creation, I'm thinking about, ooh, learning. And so it's sort of like two different poles. So, okay. We take that perspective then, and when you walk into the room, I'm sort of there sitting there thinking, and how to say this nicely, they want something from me. And my first reaction is something like, well, I'm not going to help your financial statements for the next 6 months. That's not what I'm about. Now, I say it that way because I actually have been asked in collaborative ventures to do that, to say, look, you know, they have something, they've got to do this, otherwise we won't have good books in 6 months. But I'm not in your business. And from my perspective, making your books good over the next 6 months, that's your job. What my job is to bring something to the table that you don't have. So what do I bring to the table? What do the researchers in general bring to the table? Because I'm not the only one in this situation. And we talk to men and women. Okay, two things. First of all, expertise and vision. I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but I know this industry. I know this business. I know this software. I know it cold. I've developed a lot of it. I'm continuing to develop a lot of it. There are things that we are working on now in our office that will become the basis of the next industry. Today, the learning management system is the foundation of our industry. We learned that from the Blackboard patents lawsuit. But I was working on learning management system back in the 90s when it wasn't the foundation of the industry. What we're working on now, we think, now we could be wrong, but we're probably not wrong because we know the industry, is probably going to be the foundation of the industry. I'll come back to that. The second thing I bring to businesses in New Brunswick is exposure and reputation. Because when people think New Brunswick, they don't just think Fredericton and Moncton and that other city, not just kidding, and St. John and so on. They don't think about particular companies necessarily. They think of the state of the industry as a whole. If I'm considered an expert in the industry worldwide, then New Brunswick is considered to have expertise in that industry, and so there's a bit of a rub-off effect. At least I believe that there is. So that leads me then to thinking about, okay, how do I perceive the relation ought to work between businesses and researchers such as myself? And the biggest issue that I have had, and again, remember, please, that I'm speaking personally and not on behalf of NRC in any capacity, is one of directionality. Now, what I mean by that is the direction, where the pull of research direction comes from. Does it come from business needs, or does it come from research and discoveries? Because my perception, and it might just be my perception, is that there is an expectation that researchers should follow business needs. And you can see the reasonableness of that, right? You know, I mean, it's a business, you know, a big part of research is to help business, a big part is to produce wealth. It's not the whole thing, but it's certainly a big part of it. And so the demand should come from business. But the problem, in my perception with that, is that business is focused on the short term, as I said, and business is focused on current and mainstream technology. And these are both where we're not focused. And importantly, both should not be focused. Researchers should be focused on the longer term, 12 months, 18 months, 5 years, and we should be focused not on present day technology, but next generation technology. So when the question comes up, what should guide your research priorities? What I would say is not the business needs now, because the business needs now aren't focused in the future and long term like this, but rather the direction of the research, where we see this industry going, where we see the developments being made. We're not going to be an advantage to you, a competitive advantage, if we help you do what you already do. You already do that. That's what you do. We're going to be an advantage to you if we help you see what's coming down the pipe next year, 5 years from now, and put you in a position where you're the first to know about this. You're on top of this. So that's the perspective that I take. And now, of course, you know, I'm not in this for the money. It's sort of an odd thing to come and say to people, but it is true. I'm not in this for the money. And so when I look at the collaboration that I have with industry, and, you know, I'm not going to say, well, pay me, because that's not the way it works. But again, it still needs to be a relation of mutual exchange. And so what I think researchers are looking for is recognition on the part of their collaborators that what they are doing is making a difference. And recognition, not just, you know, a pat in the back, you did a nice job, Steve, but recognition in the sense that this is reported back to the people who are ultimately funding this research. And if we're not doing that job as well, I mean, we should be told, they should be told. But if the work that researchers are doing is either directly or indirectly benefiting the work that you're doing, then the payoff for us is if you tell our funders. And so that's what I would put on the table. I've probably talked long enough, and hope I haven't stirred up the pot too much. I don't think I have. So thank you very much for your time.
And we purposely tried to keep the presentations reasonably short so that we would have lots of time for questions and discussion and interaction. And so I want to to facilitate that right now, and I'll take your questions, and you can direct them to one person or kind of leave them undirected, and we'll find the answers here if we can. So where do you want to start? Who has the first question? Steve?
I heard Mr. Downs pick up on a comment made this morning in this room about from the Business Council panelists that were here about education and literacy. The sense I get from that is they're the wrong people, or there's something missing when business leaders are telling us that we've missed the boat on education and literacy. I sense from them we want ideas or leadership and where we got to go, the top of the mountain versus talking about the bottom of the mountain. Is there some disconnect in that kind of thinking, or am I just off the mark here? Business leaders should be talking about leadership. Education and literacy to me are fundamentals that if business are talking about that, something has happened wrong in the past. So I don't know. That's where I'm all mixed up today.
Who wants to address that?
It's an interesting observation. I think I'm not an expert on literacy or education, but I think if our business leaders are telling us that this is an issue for them, that there's some type of gap, and I think it's worthy of exploring what it is, trying to resolve it, because it could be one of the things that's getting in their way of looking at the top of that mountain. Not having heard what they said, that's just an instinctive reaction.
Is there any other comments?
Sure, but I need to
press
the button and take the eye roller. Look, I have various minds on this. First of all, I think the point when it's made that New Brunswick and Atlantic Canada and probably nationally we have educational issues to address, I think that point is well taken. I think it's true. My entire professional life is education. It's what I've done even before I was in the field. And my perspective is, and you might not like this, but this is my perspective, it's good that business is finally on board with this. Because for most of the time that I have been involved in this field, I mean, my very first published article was about the funding cut to education from established programs financing back in 1985. And I've been on about that ever since. And the big problem, from my perspective, has always been to see the contributions from society, the investment from society into education. So if business is on board with that now, I'm saying, good, about time, let's roll up our sleeves and get to work. And then, now we can sit down and start thinking about the strategy, and thinking about the strategy not from the perspective of how can it help this company, how can it help that company, how can we create markets inside elementary schools or things like that, but from the perspective of how do we as a society create educational opportunities that are accessible for everyone, and how do we produce known improvements in educational outcomes. For example, one of the things that I've talked about quite a bit is feeding students. If you want to improve educational outcomes, the major predictor of improvements in educational outcomes is to make sure that children have adequate nutrition. Now, how many of you who have influence with politicians have lobbied politicians to feed New Brunswick children? So, you know, there's where I begin. And yeah, you can say there's a problem, and there is a problem. But now that people acknowledge that, we can begin working towards solutions. That's my view.
Major things, did you want to jump in on that one?
No.
You're leaving New Brunswick issues to New Brunswick?
It's a national issue.
Other questions?
Stir it up here.
Okay, there's one coming from over here before I go back to Steve.
We've got three very different levels infrastructure research represented here. To answer this, there are no simple answers, but are there one or two things that we can do to advance this notion of bringing a collaborative mindset, for example, to bring the research that people like Stephen engage in to the requirements that the Canadian military has and to the whole growth engine that the city provides? Are there places where we're not looking?
Yeah, that is a good question. I think, you know, in the introduction to my talk, I talked about how I enjoy the fact that it gave me a chance to step back and think about how this all works, because on a daily basis, I'm executing tasks and work plans and projects, and I think that's a trap that we all fall into, and sometimes lose sight of how things can plug together. I think we could certainly know each other better and know what we do. I think history is full of examples of two folks who get together and out of some unrelated conversation create something. We can certainly do a lot more of that. I'm not sure if there's anything structurally, but you know, we could be a lot less self-absorbed and listen better and try and help folks. And I'm sure that we would do some neat things if we could bring ourselves to do that.
Anybody else want to jump in on that one?
Well, for us, the way we do things is we go and we meet with the institution and we try to do a memorandum of understanding, so that we're able to see each side what do the forces need and what do the students need, and we can negotiate to a point that, you know, there's no, even though there's no cost involved in a memorandum of understanding, there's an advantage for both sides, and that's what we're working on.
Yeah, the win-win.
I'd like to add on what you said. You said that we have to start, well, that's alpha. I think you also mentioned that we should know ourselves better. And I think what happened historically with you, and what movement is going on with us in CDA, which is very exciting, we have looked at ourselves a little closer and said, lesson learned, that worked, that didn't work. One thing that the military has done well through history is creating alliance with other countries. They were towards war, but we said we did create those alliances, we were successful at it, we have negotiated many different aspects of the military life, and we said, well, we're good at that. And if we're good at that, then what should we do to expand the knowledge and critical thinking of our members? We said, let's create alliance. And I think when we looked at that as well, we've learned that the military cannot do it alone anymore. They need to reach out. I think that was the biggest fault, is the military in the past was, we'll do our own training, we'll provide our own training, we'll do whatever. Together, member, basically, we had some really bad experiences. We were talking Bosnia. We had a lack of leadership. We had some situation in Somalia. So I'm not going to go ahead and open the can of worms, but there was definitely some problem with our leaders and the leadership level. And we decided that only a military strictly mine personal. It's not working anymore because they're facing different challenges today. Afghanistan is one of the prime examples now. Mm-hmm. We're not only doing soldier, we're doing peacekeeping. We're moving into three different phases. Maybe in the first time in history, we're actually going to achieve something instead of walking out, because before they say, You know, they used to walk out and say, well, we can't provide all the services. And I think Canada is right now being a leader in saying, listen, we'll get rid of the Italian map. But not only we're going to get rid of the Italian map, we will provide you with infrastructure and school. Those things are being done right now. And then CDA now has been approached to be, I guess, a leader in education for the military members. And I think we're doing it. I think we are. I think the question that the member was asked, if you're kind of confused, I think that we have to talk to each other. We have to know ourselves better and look at the lesson learned that we have and go out there and create some partnership. And then when we create a partnership, we find out that the other party is already in a partnership with somebody else. Mm-hmm. And it was wow. See, we're seeing this link going across, and I think that that's what we have to do. We have to go, and then the government, the private sectors, and institution has to start talking together and create we can talk. I think it's time to pass for action and then start to looking at each other and say, yeah, what can I do to help you? How can we help you? We found that so far we haven't regretted any of the move we've made so far, and we get a meet every time we sign an agreement.
Okay. Were you able to hear that at the top there? Okay. Okay. No, that's okay. Did you want to talk on that question as well? The Cavendish question.
Yeah. Just briefly, because I want to highlight. The opposite to the collective mindset, which is exclusivity and isolationism, and I find it actually a good thing that the other two panelists here represent the opposite of each of those two things. Cities in the United States that try to do what Fredericton has done with the common Wi-Fi and all of that are finding themselves in court because the telcos don't want to let them do it. They want to maintain this exclusivity over the market, to the detriment of the city in question. And our involvement as a nation in other countries as a peacekeeping force isn't done with some sort of expectation of payment or return. It's done because it's something that we feel we should do for the good of the world. And these kind of attitudes, I think, are not just good attitudes for a social and national government. I think they're good attitudes for the businesses that are in our society, especially, you know, when we're smaller, you know, we're not going to win on a lot of these other grounds. I get asked from time to time, well, could you produce some exclusive content? Can you produce some proprietary knowledge? You know, something for just this company. And if that's the basis on which we're going to try to compete in this province, we're going to get crushed by people like Microsoft and IBM, who produce more patents in a day or in an afternoon than we could produce in a year, even going flat out. So we need to understand, as an industry in this province, that we need to be non-exclusive and we need to be non-isolationist, that we need to share. And sharing is information. So I'm always looking for more blogs from New Brunswick, for example, to include in my listings. Sharing is in the nature of the products that we work on, we develop, and we provide. So I'm always urging companies in this province to think about doing things in open source, to think about producing open content, and come back to the idea of producing or making possible access to educational resources for everybody in the world. Think about, just for a second, what that does for our industry in New Brunswick if we ever pulled that off. Imagine what sort of reputation, imagine what sort of business would be produced for the province that made education accessible to everybody in the world. You know, now, probably we can't do that alone. Probably we have to partner with other cities and other provinces. Nonetheless, I think that the approach of being non-exclusive and non-isolationist does have long-term benefits for us.
That's a good good perspective there. Now, there's a couple others. Yes.
I have a question for each of the panelists. It's actually a two-part question. What do you feel is the greatest challenge in your respective fields in moving the knowledge and innovation agenda forward? And what are some solutions we can implement to address those challenges?
Okay, the greatest barrier, starting off, moving the knowledge agenda forward. Who wants to start on that one? Who wants to jump in on what's keeping us? What's holding us back?
that's a question that we could reflect on a long time. I think, I don't think the challenges are structural or, I don't believe you have to be big to be best. As I start to think through the things that it's not, I'm landing at people as the challenge, because I think people can knock down all the other barriers. So I'd like to take some time to flesh out the idea of maybe it's people, enough of them, more smarter people, I think there are a whole bunch of issues I think that I think we have to invest in our own communities. I think we have to invest our money, our time, and our effort. I think we need to minimize the amount of inputs our local companies import as part of their process and build a strong community here. So I'm interested in substituting imports, local investment capital, cradle-to-grave education system, I think are the enablers of people and ideas and innovation. And if I look at the solutions, it would be a legislative or regulatory environment that eliminates friction in making that happen. I think that's nebulous enough that I can't get in trouble anywhere.
With the focus on people.
Yeah, that's people.
Yeah. That's a good perspective. Did you want to jump in on that one too?
Or? Well, for us, the challenges are the perception of the Canadian Forces members that, they might not want to be educated, they might not need to be educated, but they do. Like, when they go on tours, they need to know what they're doing, and they need the proper training and education to do their job. So I think that's the challenge, mostly. It's the... the perception that they don't need it, but they do.
Helping to overcome that.
Yeah, I want to say first of all what they said, and add to that. I've gotten my notes here. Expectations of immediate and short-term outcomes. This is education, right? Education doesn't happen overnight, and there are no shortcuts. There really are no shortcuts, which means, no matter what we do, it's going to take time. And especially if we're looking at K-12 education, it's going to take a generation to see the results. And we need to understand this going in. No matter how well we do, it's going to take that amount of time. And I say that because, there's always the tendency to say, oh, it's not working, we've got to try something else, after 6 months. Oh, it didn't work. Right. So we need to... when we have an educational plan, stick to the plan. I don't like saying it like that, but you know what I mean. Like, don't jump on this fad and then this fad and then this fad. Just because something is big south of the border doesn't mean we need to adopt it right away. I think that if we stick to the fundamentals, make sure that we're adequately funding the system and make sure that we're doing the development and the research, that those results will pay off, but just not tomorrow. The other thing I have in my notes is, I put in my notes aren't always very grammatical, big vision. we have to believe in ourselves, and we have to believe that we're capable of being much more than we are, that we're capable of being more than just a small province in Canada. We should have a big vision. I went to Tasmania one time, and I went to Tasmania because I was from New Brunswick, and they invited me of all people to go there and talk about social and economic development in Tasmania. I went down there in 2004, and what I said to them, and I would say it here, is so they were saying, what could we do? And I went down there and I said, well, what does Tasmania have that nobody else has? And their first thought was sheep. But it's not true. I was just in New Zealand. There's sheep there too. And I said to them, imagine if you had Cambridge in the middle of Tasmania. No way, right? But think of your Cambridge back when Cambridge was developed. Cambridge, outlying town, middle of nowhere. It's not London. And they developed Cambridge, and the other city developed Oxford. And that's the sort of thing that we do here. We've got this fabulous, and look outside, we've got this fabulous natural environment that a lot of it isn't cut down, that would bring people here. We have the climate, a nice climate. We're getting good infrastructure. We're just a short flight from Europe. We're a short flight from the U.S. and the rest of Canada. We could have Cambridge or Oxford here if that's the vision. But the thing is, we have to have that vision. We have to believe that we can be so much more than we are, because we're in a perfect position to do it if we only saw that.
Great.
I had a question.
Back at the top, Lynn.
That was you just before Stephen Down. My name's Lynn Casey, and I'm a startup business, and I said that we do interactive learning for healthcare providers. And Stephen just spoke on what's been our biggest frustration and obstacle in starting a new business. We were bedside nurses, and we decided that we couldn't get access to quality education because we worked shift work or missed opportunities, or because of the nursing shortage, we couldn't get time off in order to attend these opportunities. So that's where MedCensus came from, online format and CD-ROM with a communicating LMS. And we went out to our national association in Saskatoon to do our big Canadian launch, and the questions were, well, who are you and how come you get to do this? And you're from New Brunswick, and it was kind of like a disbelief kind of thing. And that's what hurts us and frustrates us. We want to overcome that obstacle that because we're from New Brunswick, it can't be big. And we found right across the board there's an inability of the Atlantic provinces to believe in their own homegrown challenges, talent, and ability. And we just went down to Kansas City to the Rural Health Information Technology Trade Show, and they were all over us. They couldn't get enough of us. They were all excited, and there was representatives from all over the United States. Every single state was represented. We've gotten phenomenal response and emails from all these Americans. And we've been contacted by the UK, and we have a UK marketing firm, and they're very optimistic about our takeoff here, but Canada has been disappointing, and especially New Brunswick and surrounding area because of the inability, it seems, to believe in local talent. So Stephen has just touched on that, and I think it's so sad that we can't motivate each other to get the message out there, like, we can do it, we can rule the world.
That's a good very good, Lynn. And how do you get? We're talking about collaboration and partnerships. And how do we? I mean, is that the answer? Can that help with this problem of our perception of being just a small, province and small town operation? How does the whole idea of partnership and collaboration help to overcome some of that?
I think we can point to a number of of very successful New Brunswick or Atlantic Canadian or however you want to cut it stories. I mean, I listened to that story and I thought, I'd rather have the American and UK market than the Saskatchewan market. And in fact, maybe the way into the Saskatchewan market is through North Dakota. There's no question that Canadians have a negative view of New Brunswick. many do have an inaccurate view of New Brunswick, but I mean, up the river here, there's a worldwide firm that dominates its market. I think we can band together and support our local guys, and we've got people who are doing business in Hong Kong, all over. I just would ignore them. You know, I mean, if they, you can't be a prophet in your own land to some extent. And if someone from Toronto or someone from Vancouver or wherever has that mindset, I'd go around them.
Well, we wouldn't be standing if we did.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's actually added fuel to our fire.
Yeah.
But it's so disheartening that it seems impossible for us to believe in our own local talent. And I mean, necessity is mother of invention. So we saw a problem. We saw the geographic diversity of New Brunswick and the rest of Canada, and we addressed it. It's like, hey, we can do this. Everybody's got a computer in their house. You know, that's how we went at it. It's simple as that. But if we listened to the discouragement, we wouldn't be standing still. We just moved to another country or another state.
I don't think we should take our cues from Saskatchewan or Toronto or Ottawa. I really, let's ignore those guys.
That's a good point.
Well, I kind of have to take my cues from Ottawa.
But that is a good perspective, I think. Of sometimes you do have to go outside and be a winner outside before the people locally actually finally accept you and recognize. That's the reality of. Yes, you have a question here.
I have a similar experience. I work for the New Brunswick Security Commission in the education coordinating position, and when we go down to the States to the conferences that are down there, Canada is approximately 5 years ahead of the U.S. as far as our education initiatives go in the finance markets and security capital markets. So that's great. You know, we're good there. But what my question is, we also sit on committees that are formed of the rest of the provinces. So you say, you had mentioned to, you know, kind of ignore people when they put New Brunswick down or when they don't have the confidence in our abilities. What do you suggest from that avoidance? You can't just ignore them. Here, we're on this committee with representatives from, you know, Ontario, BC, everywhere, and they're dominating it and almost playing the schoolyard bully and pushing the smaller properties out of the light.
Well, I used to work for a national organization that was directed out of Toronto. I worked in its head office and I worked in its regions. All bullies share one thing in common, and that's that they're cowards. And if you stand up to a coward, he'll find someone else to bully. Right? That's what I learned in the schoolyards in the north end of Halifax, and it's been true everywhere else I've gone.
Stephen, did you have something to say on that one?
I think you could simply say that, you know, the experts in this field recognize that the experts in this field come from places like New Brunswick, and that this is well known. And if you don't believe it, look it up on Google, and ask yourself how many e-learning references from Toronto do you find on Google, and how many e-learning references from New Brunswick do you find on Google. And they can say whatever they want, but you just point to the evidence, and the evidence speaks for itself.
We are well known here, and sometimes those relationships, like Linda mentioned, forming relationships where you're doing some interesting projects and outside of the Canadian perspective help to raise your level of, sometimes it does help to have those kind of relationships with other jurisdictions outside of the Canadian scene. Good, a question up here.
I'm not sure if it's a question for the panel or a question maybe for the learning folks. Carolyn College of Innovation, by the way. The discussion, you know, at least the description is the overview and basically the discussion on kind of the three legs of the stool on how do you pull it together and collaborate in order to create a better solution, whatever you're, depending on what your perspective is. And there's been lots of comments around a vision for how to do this and what is the vision for us. I mean, from a commercial model, we need to understand the commercial side of it as well as the social side of it and academic, et cetera. Is there a plan to do that? To actually look at how, you know, what is the vision? How are we going to work together to do that? I know there's been lots of conversations over the year, but I'm not sure that I've seen, you know, something that actually, here's what our vision is, and here's what our strategy and plan is to do this as we run.
This was addressed at the board meeting, board meeting on November the 9th, and from the three points that I made in the slide this morning, that is what we're going to be doing, so a plan will be forthcoming. And this kind of dialogue today is meant to set the stage for what we believe, from a leadership perspective, to be the base of it, in that in a small province where we do have much to celebrate, we have got to get this critical need for collaboration, and we're connecting the dots, and then together with the minds of the people who represent the organization, and we'll be have a plan roll out. What we do?
I'm going to ask by when.
No, good question. Thank you. Other members holding us accountable. Don, what do you have?
I just want to make a comment, not so much a question, if I may.
Sure.
I've been in this industry. When I started in this industry, I had hair and it was dark. that's a while ago. And I'm not unsure that if you looked into the archives of George Butters' flight with locks he used to carry around 10 years ago, that you wouldn't find comments exactly like we just heard from you. 10 years ago, we were trying to produce content, and we were trying to sell it in our own province, and our own province weren't really adopters of what we were building here. And then I think we realized, though we didn't admit it to ourselves, that, yeah, we knew there's 60 million people in the UK, and we know that there's 300 million people in the US, but we were still trying to build something in Miramichi and sell it to somebody in St. John's. I think the companies that have survived and prospered have come to grips with this. And I think, to your point, which is a wonderful one, we've come back to our own market a number of times, and there's good examples in this country and in this province of people who've gone somewhere else and came back in. My grandmother always used to say, far away cows grow on horns. So, you know, and there's some truth to that. You know, if I've got a marketer in the UK selling back into New Brunswick, I'd probably have better luck. And we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that though we're a wonderful, connected province, and you know, one of our beauties is one of our downfalls. And to Stephen's point, we don't have the population of bees and city in this entire province. But that's one of the things that makes us unique. The point about Googling, you know, e-learning and New Brunswick versus Toronto, you know, the quality of life that we've got here, the products that are produced here, there's a lot to be said for that. And back to another point of Stephen's, and good quality stuff coming out of here, and another cow analogy, the happy cows produce better milk. So I think that we've got really good product coming out of here. And, well, we just need to look to other markets. Don't be looking in New Brunswick. You know, if there's an opportunity here, we used to try to sell to the government. The government was very supportive of the industry, but they never bought the product.
Oh, that's a very good comment. I know my past experience. I mean, we have McCain Foods on our doorstep. I remember, you know, thinking of them as a potential market. Well, after we had successfully sold, you know, a number of products to Nestle, 10 times the size of McCain Foods, McCain was quite interested. But it was only after that. Mm-hmm. But it does take some time.
Probably one of our best-selling examples of that. Yeah.
We probably have time for one more question. Or we've got like 1 minute left, so.
Hi, Steve, when you give me a presentation, you said you were going to get back to the idea of what's next, and then you left it there, so I've been waiting.
And then I never did. That was a test to see if anyone was listening to the talk. and right now my computer is just hibernated. No. And it's interesting, this topic, the collaboration and all of that. I mean, the what's next is all the Web 2.0 stuff, the e-learning 2.0, content networks, learning networks, online collaboration, personal learning environments. We in Moncton have been working with people like Cetus in Britain and elsewhere on the personal learning environment. So I hope you'll be able to talk a bit more about that next month or so. Those are the sorts of things that are coming. Distributed systems where people working in different agencies, not necessarily affiliated with a single agency, are able to bring resources in from around the world. And where the basis for this is largely open software, open source software, certainly all of these applications are being developed open source. So if you're developing proprietary e-learning application software right now, you're developing in a shrinking market. And also to a large degree, open content. And people, and I'm sure you all know, you see every day almost there's another big open content initiative announced, you know. So again, if you're developing proprietary wide market content, I'm not talking about the custom stuff necessarily, but proprietary wide content market, you're again developing in a shrinking market. So what we're looking at are ways to leverage that, thinking of that as the new infrastructure. Where is the value add over and above that? Because that's where the new markets are going to be. But to understand these new markets, it'll be necessary to have a good grounding and understanding of what is being called e-learning 2.0 and the personal learning environment, that sort of thing. So that would be my 2-minute version in 5 minutes of where it's going. Does that help?
Okay, thank you. I think we're going to have to probably wrap this up here since it's 2:15 and I know people have other places to go. But I just want to thank our three panelists for making the time to come out here. And I think they gave us a lot of thoughts and some good perspective on some of the issues around collaboration and how we can move forward and hopefully for the betterment of our industry and of New Brunswick. So thank you very much. And that ends our day. So thank you very much for coming out. And.